Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.
Jennifer Zamparelli, 2FM. Good morning. So, journalist Rosie Green was devastated when her husband walked out after 15 years of marriage. Her world just fell apart. But remarkably, she turned that heartache into something just so positive that helps many women who have been in her situation. She's on the line now. Rosie, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
It's great to have you. Now, you have documented your breakup in a book, How to Heal a Broken Heart. So can we start at the very beginning of this story? You were partners for 26 years, is that right?
Yeah, so we were kind of, we were sort of teenage sweethearts. So we met at university at the age of 18, and we were together for, as you said, 26 years, 15 of them married. And, you know, actually, you know, had a, you know, pretty very successful relationship for that time. And I actually wrote a column about our kind of perfectly imperfect family life for Red magazine, which was really popular for about 10 years. So it was almost like so many people were on the sort of parenting, you know, moving house journey with us.
And you packed a lot into those years. You got married, you had two kids. It all seemed to be going extremely well and everything was fine. And I'm sure there was really, really happy times in those years, but when did you notice that things weren't right?
Well, you see, I think that's was the big shock to me, was that it really, the kind of breakup for me happened completely out of the blue. So I think, you know, it was very, very shocking. So it wasn't like there was a long build up. I mean, there was probably a couple of months where I started to notice a bit of distancing, and he was a bit angrier than before, and I got a sense of unease about somebody who he worked with, you know. So I was kind of, you know, there were various signs, but it was very quick before the end of the breakup.
And then what happened? Can you talk to me about checking his phone?
Yeah, we'd always been incredibly open about our communications, because there'd never been anything to hide. But I saw a sort of message flash up on his phone that was from somebody, and it just looked very sort of, you know, bit more familiar than it should do, really. Mm. And then maybe a few weeks before, and then I checked again, and that time I did check, because, well, actually, I'd asked him for his code, because I was like, I felt so weird about this sort of new phone that he'd got. That was when I found sort of messages that were more revealing and were just sort of devastating.
And did you confront him immediately?
Yes, I did. From that point, it was a very tricky unraveling for about sort of 6 months of just kind of, you know, him checking out really of the relationship and not wanting to continue it. And for me, you know, it had come as such a shock and such a surprise. And so actually those kind of 6 months of sort of in, out, you know, will he go, won't he go, were the most devastating for me.
I read that you said, though, it was a long breakup. It was, you know, 5-6 months of we're going to make it work, and then him checking out. And that must have been, so devastating and so upsetting to do.
And also at the time, you know, because I was sort of desperately trying to hold on to the fact, you know, trying to hold on to hope and trying to keep it together, I didn't really talk to only a handful of people about it, because obviously I wanted to think, well, if we make it through, I don't want this to be the kind of, you know, the sort of blot that everyone thinks about, you know, all the time, and that we've had to revisit all the time. So in a way, I was getting no kind of clarity on the situation. I was getting nobody saying to me, this is not okay, this is not, you know, so. That was just awful. And also, I think that lack of certainty, that waiting for the punch, it's a bit like waiting for the plaster to be pulled off. And actually, in the book, I interviewed this really amazing hypnotherapist, and she was saying that the human mind really struggles with uncertainty. So it's almost better to know, for it to be the worst, but to know, because at least from that point, you can be climbing up again.
That's really interesting. Makes a lot of sense in these current times we're in, doesn't it, with COVID, and the uncertainty is, you know, for people is really quite difficult. Would you have liked advice at the time of the breakup? Were you getting advice, or were people just kind of letting you figure it out yourselves?
Well, I was obviously doing some immense Googling, which I think is both good and bad.
Yeah.
And I was visiting the bookstores as well, because I kind of, you know, I was trying to get, you know, trying to get the sort of self-help, you know, angle on it. But actually, once I opened up and I started talking to my friends, because I couldn't bear it any longer, that was really good for me, because it gave me a kind of clarity. And that's why, you know, you kindly said in your intro that it was helping other women. And I just think actually the, you know, talking about this narrative, you know, talking about it brings, there's so much shame and guilt around splitting up, and there's so much, you know, so much damage to your self-esteem and your ego, that actually to kind of get other people's perspective on it and to not feel alone is really comforting.
So then can I ask you, because you said it was, you know, 5-6 months of, you know, counselling, trying to make it work and not happening and going through, at what point did you stop trying? At what point did you go, okay, this is not going to work?
Done. Well, it sort of came to a head just before Christmas. And, you know, I think Christmas is the massive time, isn't it, where everyone's like, right, we've got to keep it together for the family. Mm. We've got to do that, you know. And so I'd been on this sort of frantic treadmill for, you know, kind of 5 or 6 months. I think, you know, I wrote about how I think in 2 months I'd lost 2 stones. So I was kind of, I was an absolute shell of myself. And then just before Christmas, he said, he came back and said, no, it's definitely over. And I'm going to move out, but I'm going to stay for Christmas. And I think we should have Christmas. But, you know, at that point, it was so volatile, and there was so much sort of shouting and crossness and all this kind of stuff, that I just thought this is going to be absolutely hellish. And I just said, you know what, I think we can't do that. And at that point, he just said, well, you know, I think that's incredibly selfish of you, which is typical of your behaviour. And I thought, no, that's not right. So at that point, I just thought, no, this is not okay. This is, you know, I've got a bit more of a gut instinct as to what is right or wrong, and a bit of self-preservation and preservation for the kids. So that's the point
that you change. Yeah, it's amazing to see, you know, you go through such a dark time and then come out the other end. I bet you never imagined you would when you're in it in the moment. But amazingly, you have turned this trauma around and now write articles about it and give tips on how to heal a broken heart, a lot of which are documented in your book, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So it made me realise when I was writing that obviously heartbreak is invisible. It's happening in the mind, but it also affects the body. But what was so interesting to me was the way the brain kind of sabotages your recovery. So it's almost like your primal self takes over. And, you know, in the way that, you know, we all, you know, we haven't really developed from our primal selves in terms of food. We still want to eat everything. So we have to sort of, as we evolve, we have to stop ourselves eating everything. Well, in the same way with the brain, it is desperately craving that kind of connection. It's definitely craving not to be rejected from the pack. And there's studies that show that you kind of crave your ex as strongly as an addict does heroin. You know, it's triggering the same things in your brain. So what the brain does is it chases that person, even though we know it's bad for us. So it makes you look at them on Instagram, it makes you do all those things that ultimately hinder your recovery. So for me, as a person that had access to so many experts and so much help, I just wanted to help women that didn't, actually, because they're expensive. Mm. And also you have to be in a place where you can look for them and reach out for them. So that's what I wanted the book to be, a sort of helping hand to those people.
It's amazing and so needed. Can I ask how you're doing now?
Well, do you know what? I'm really good, actually. Good. Really, really good. And, you know, I'm definitely healing. You know, it's not done. You know, I think it'll always be a process, and I'm sure there will be a time, you know, but it's still a journey.
It's a process.
But I certainly don't have that gut punch when I wake up in the morning, and I'm not shaking all day, and I'm not doing any of those things. And I do believe, I interviewed the, you know, the really great TV presenter Amanda Byron, and she said it's a gift. And I really do believe in so many ways I'm more fulfilled and happier in some senses. You know, there are obviously still things like, you know, sorting the children out and the future and all that kind of stuff. But in a sense, I feel like I'm much more authentic to myself.
That's amazing to hear. And thank you so much for coming on the show and telling us all about it. A broken heart is a terrible thing. And Rosie, your book is just amazing for anyone who's going through that. So thank you for coming on the show. Best of luck with the book, How to Heal a Broken Heart. It is out now. Rosie Green is amazing. Go check it out if you need it, or if you know somebody who might benefit from a book like this. We'll be back right after these.
Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.